Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This is the broadcast for July the 7th of the year of our Lord, 2020. This is hour two of two. The goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. We reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome. Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org, back with us. Welcome to the Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Thanks, Sam. Good to be back.
I don't even know how to respond to this. There's only like one or two topics in the news, it seems. Riots, destruction, meltdown, corona, masks, lockdowns, whatever the heck. But, man, there's a lot more going on in the Republic than people realize, Patrick.
There's a whole lot going on, absolutely.
How do we convey this to the American people? It seems like the mainstream press, you know what it reminds me of? The old radio stations used to have disc jockeys. And the DJs would play a bunch of songs, and their job was partly to let you listen to the songs that you knew and loved and everything else, but partly their job was to entertain you, and partly their job was to educate you and bring the news to you and inform you about what's going on in your day and in your world and in your life and introduce you to some new songs and et cetera, et cetera. It seems like we should be having that in newspapers and radio and today, but it seems like, you know what, the news channels, like the new jukebox radio stations, the new stations, instead of having 2,000 songs or whatever, they've got 300 songs they just play over and over and over. And the news channels, instead of having 100 headlines that matter to you and your life and your day and your world and your work environment and everything else, it seems like they've just got the, you know, couple of headlines they lead with and repeat, and if it bleeds, it leads, and you're kind of left wanting.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. It's I don't know if it's, you know, ratings or they're pushing an agenda or both. I suspect, but yeah, it's you know, it's Corona, it's Trump, it's protests, and like you said, not much else. And there's a lot of important things going on all around the country. You know, I wish there was more attention paid to state and local news instead of everything just, you know, focusing on Washington D.C. or the national you know, headline of the day, because you know, there's a lot of important work being done, and there are, you know, good positive stories, people standing up for their rights, their individual freedoms. You know, we just had July 4th, and a lot of people still have that that spirit of independence, I think.
I bring that all up because there's a headline that I think you might want to respond to. It says this: the pandemic could finally usher in a 4-day work week, writes the Huffington Post. Now, work weeks and hours worked and forced hours to work and et cetera have been really a hotly debated issue that parallels the rise of unions in America that relate to whether you have health insurance or not, relate to all these things are intertwined, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, yeah, you talk about, you know, one of the common refrains we always hear is, oh, you know, The unions brought you the weekend or that kind of thing, and that's part of their agenda because they want to, you know, force workers into unions and then force them to pay dues and all that. But that's not really true. We all know that's a talking point, but that's not the truth. The truth is, you know, workers and employers became productive enough that we could, you know, a 40-hour work week could get enough done that there could be money to be made by both sides, and people could take a good wage, and you know, productive workers can get rewarded for their productivity and all that. And I think, you know, to the extent people can telework now, and to the extent maybe there's going to be shifts in 4-hour or 4-day, you know, of work, but the hours are different, or however, you know, those types of things. I think, you know, it's important that if, you know, employers and employees can get together and say this works better for both of us, let's make it happen, then that's something that should happen. And you know, that kind of flexibility is actually you know, unions are often the biggest opponents of that. They're the ones who keep you in rigid schedules and you know, that limit that flexibility And right now, when you see so many businesses struggling to deal with coronavirus and total changes, and you know, you have a restaurant and you used to make all your money with people coming in and sitting elbow to elbow, and now suddenly you're trying to have you know, takeout or delivery is a big portion of your business, and you're having to space people out and set up tables in the parking lot or whatever people are trying to do to survive. Having, you know, a rigid union contract that dictates one-size-fits-all work rules that was written for how things were, not how things are, is a big impediment to that. And I think that's something we're definitely seeing all around the country.
Let me give you the headline from your website that prompted that little bit of introspection that I provided into this, because I don't believe that unions have played a positive role for the most part. They have done some good. The more flexible and the more the union leadership listens to the rank and file and the more transparent the union is and et cetera, the better, the more they stick to the core of the workman's needs and wants and circumstances, the better. But oftentimes they're run off the rails. But here's the headline that really highlighted this for me from your website. It says this: to restore accountability, workers must have free choice to refuse to fund union and to reject union. And I think this is kind of at the core, and as we see a lot of changes in work circumstances for people, whether it be work from home, work a four-hour week, whatever. I'm not here to dictate how it's going to go down for every business, but I am here to say workers must have this choice, and it must be a transparent discussion, or we've really lost the battle from the inside out, sir.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, and that, you know, that goes to the freedom, the individual liberty argument that we at National Right to Work always make. We're not against people voluntarily joining unions. If that works for them, if that betters their circumstances, they should have the freedom to do it. We absolutely believe that. And you know, there's a First Amendment right to associate people you want to associate with. And that's all fine. The problem, as we've you know, we've talked about so many times, and a lot of people, whether it's you know, mainstream media or union officials, they try to say, you know, that you're either for unions or against, and we say no, that's a false choice. The choice, at least the one faced that we believe it should be, is: are unions voluntary or are they coercive? Does the government give them powers to force themselves on workers who don't want anything to do with them, to put into a contract that workers will be fired if they don't pay dues? We say the government should not grant them those powers. They, of course, have those powers in many states. We've made some progress rolling those back, state right to work laws, the Janus Supreme Court decision, which protects public employees. But that's the real choice. And once you have a voluntary, truly voluntary union system, then anyone who wants to join can, and anyone who doesn't want anything to do with them or thinks that they're better off on their own, maybe they're better off in some smaller group of workers, then they have the freedom to do so, and that's how things should be.
Well, and then the next step after that is transparency of information, where I can analyze the union and say, hey, are these leaders truly carrying out what my needs are, what my desires are, what my expectations are, if they're going to represent me, just like in the country? You know, parties publish their platforms, et cetera. You know, we need to basically say, look, it's transparency. I want to know what you're working on for me. If you want me to join your union, you know, pardon the pun, what's in it for me? You got to show me that you're going to represent what I want. And if you do, then I'm all aboard. If you don't, at some point, I'm not going to be happy. I'm going to leave. And the force prevention of leaving is a lot of the problem. But I think transparency is key. Speaking of the Janus decision, which has made a tremendous difference and has been a huge win at the Supreme Court, we got to go back to court for some more mojo, sad to say. Headline says Foundation, that's of course Patrick and crew, asks Supreme Court to hear Janus case again. Why? They're seeking the return of forced fees. Case could set a precedent for hundreds of millions of dollars of labor money that could go back to these victims. So one is to say we won. Two is to say we're going to have to force you to give the money back too, right?
Yeah, and this, you know, it should be a slam dunk, but of course it isn't. So, you know, obviously 2 years ago, or just over two years ago now, June 27th, 2018, the Supreme Court ruled in the Janus decision and said the First Amendment protects public employees from being forced to fund a union as a condition of working for the government. So it says the government cannot say, this special interest group, you have to pay them money in order to work for the government, to take a job as a teacher or a police officer or any other type of government employee. And so that, you know, the Supreme Court, when the Supreme Court talks about what the First Amendment means, it's not saying this is what it means going forward. It says this is what the First Amendment has always said, and it's always protected government employees in this way. And so, you know, Mark Janus had won the case, but the issue, he had filed it, and he was seeking $3,000 in back dues, because that's the money taken from him in violation of his rights for the period of the statute of limitations, which is, in his case, it was 2 years from the day he filed the lawsuit. And the National Right to Work Foundation attorneys filed it on his behalf. And so, but what's happened is the unions all across the country have refused to give any of this money back to workers, not just workers who are members, but non-members, people who had already said, we don't want anything to do with you, but they were taking their money anyway in violation of the First Amendment. So we're seeking that back now at the U.S. Supreme Court, and could hear any day now, probably this week, whether they're going to hear it next term.
Our prayers are with you, my friends, and I will say this, the First Amendment front and center right now. That's kind of one of the big stories you're not hearing much about. You're hearing all the rioters have the right to destroy and stuff. You're not hearing about the First Amendment rights for the rest of us, huh?
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999. Or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
All right, Patrick Simmons with us, ladies and gentlemen. RightToWork.org. Get involved today. There's another headline that's First Amendment-esque, if you will, that I want to highlight. So we talked about the foundation asking the Supreme Court to revisit the Janus case again, saying, you know what, we need millions of dollars in refunds. That's where you were, Patrick.
Yeah, this is so, like we talked about, the case at issue is Mark Janus. He's back at the U.S. Supreme Court. This is actually the continuation of the same case that the Supreme Court ruled on 2 years ago. The issue now is whether the union can be required to pay the money back, the money it took in clear violation of the First Amendment, as the Supreme Court ruled already in this case. And, you know, that's $3,000, and, you know, that's a decent amount of money, of course. But the big news here is that this would set a precedent that all these non-members across the country, of which there are hundreds of thousands who were non-members at the time of Janus, who had been forced to pay money to the SEIU, the teachers' unions, various other government unions, AFSCME, the defendant in the Janus case, and had been forced for years. And so there's all these lawsuits around the country seeking back dues. The foundation has brought them, I think, in a couple dozen cases. There's others that have been filed, and we think there's at least, you know, 50 or 60 of these all across the country, most of them as class action. So they're not seeking money back for one or two workers, but they're saying all the non-members deserve their money back. And so we're looking at what we estimate to be over $200 million, possibly more. It's hard to know. The unions have the numbers. The people filing the lawsuits often don't. We have one case in California for 40,000 non-members, and we think that case alone could be $120 million in dues that are owed back to that those 40,000 workers who didn't join the SEIU in that case and had been forced to pay money for years. But, you know, the SEIU has kept all that money they took in violation of the First Amendment. And so this could set a precedent that could be big news for workers who for years had their First Amendment rights violated. And, you know, they've been doing this for decades. These lawsuits don't seek money back going decades because there's statute of limitations. It's 2 years in many cases. In a few states, it's 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. But that's about as far back as any of these cases go. So still a small fraction of the billions, literally billions of dollars that unions have seized from workers going back to, you know, the 60s when government forced unionism first started coming into play. But so this is a big deal. And, you know, that's a lot of money that I'm sure union officials would prefer to spend on, you know, pushing their agenda, trying to elect the candidates that they support, not necessarily candidates that these workers support. And so if we can force them to pay back, you know, 100, 200, maybe more millions of dollars, we're talking a big deal. And, you know, a return to the principle that this is the workers' money. They should decide how it's spent, not a union official who they don't want anything to do with but are forced to be under. In terms of they're forced under their union contract and union representation, even though they don't want it. Teachers, of course, you see all the time, teachers are often paid simply by seniority. But for a young teacher who's really good and doing a great job, and maybe they're teaching a science class, you know, physics or something that's tough to get good qualified people, and they say, no, you've only worked 2 years, so you're paid on that basis, not on the fact that you're doing an excellent job and your students are excelling and everything else. So you have workers who are harmed by the union representation, were forced to pay money to the union for that supposed representation.
Yeah, it almost creates a one-size-fits-all scenario.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so now, you know, but we're seeing the opportunity for, under Janus, for people to cut off those dues, and we're also trying to get the money back that was taken over the years.
So, and I pray, I don't know what judges are going to have the guts to do that. Necessarily, although I pray for your success. Another headline that relates is this, before we let you go here, Patrick. Right to Work Foundation backs Civil Service Commission's proposal protecting workers' First Amendment Janus rights. This is another kind of avenue, but the same topic, really, right?
Yeah, so this is, you know, one of the, so Janus said that the big top-line decision was you can't force workers to pay money to a union as a condition of government employment. But the Supreme Court went further they laid out the standard for what that means, because we know from unions and the tricks that they'll play that they'll say, okay, well, no one has to pay, but and this is something that they do. They say, but you can only stop paying if you object during this 1 2-week period once every 3 years. That's 15 to 30 days before the end of the contract. That's a real restriction that unions have tried all across the country to impose. So, you know, in other words, your First Amendment rights only apply for a brief window of a couple days a year or a couple days every few years. And the Supreme Court said, no, that's, you know, we're gonna make it clear. When we say voluntary, dues, not forced. We really mean it. And so what that means is workers need to opt in to paying the money, not these schemes that that unions have hooked up where they have to opt out. And if they miss the window, then they get put back into the pool of people whose money is taken. And so the opt-in standard has, unfortunately, a lot of states have really ignored that. And, you know, they do so because the unions want them to. And they figure, well, look, you know, we'll deal with it in court. You know, if it comes up, but if the workers don't file a case, then the unions will just keep taking the money and until it gets challenged. And so we've been pushing states across the country to really be clear about what Janus means. The headline you mentioned is from Michigan, the Civil Service Commission there, which does not have appointees or is not controlled by appointees of the current governor, Governor Whitner, but from the previous governor, Governor Snyder. And so they're trying to basically make that standard clear, make it an opt-in. So tell all the workers, government employees, state employees in this case, you have this right. You can opt in. Here's a form to do it, and you have to opt in every year. Nothing can stop you from paying dues if you want to, but if you want the state to collect the dues and send them to the union, you need to sign this form saying you understand you have a First Amendment right not to pay, but you choose to pay anyway. And it's a very simple, you know, process, but it really protects all the workers from being forced to pay sort of because they forgot to stop it or that.
Not only does it protect them, Patrick, but I think one key point for people to understand here is that it educates employees, too. A lot of times employees don't know what their rights are. They believe they have rights, but they don't fundamentally feel like, well, I'm not an attorney. I don't really know. And so they get kind of duped into this. I'm just not sure. I don't want to, you know, upset the status quo. And they don't really know what their rights are to stand firmly. And this will help them get, wait a minute. If there's a document that I have to waive my First Amendment rights, I'm not doing that. And so it's an education piece, too.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, you know, that's what governments are supposed to do, protect individuals' rights. And that includes the rights of government employees. And so this is a step Michigan has taken. We just filed formal comments in support of that. We made a few suggestions to how they should set up the system. We've seen other actions in a few other states. Alaska did an executive order putting something similar into place. Not too long ago, the Attorney General of Texas issued an opinion basically laying out the same standard and saying this is what local governments and the state government there needs to do. So we're finally seeing more action, but of course we need other states to go and do the same thing. But any state that's deducting dues out of workers' paychecks and sending it to a union, we believe Janus says that this kind of opt-in system, where you not only opt in, but you acknowledge you have a First Amendment right not to pay, and you waive that right. And once you do that, then the government can take the money and send it to the union. But if they don't, if the individual worker hasn't done that, then they can't. And it's a simple process. Like I said, it doesn't stop anyone from paying dues. And if you don't want the government to deduct dues, you can pay the union directly yourself, too. That's another option. Unions don't like it. They prefer that, you know, automatic deduction coming out. But it's all about letting workers choose. And it, you know, we've always made the point, Janus does not stop a single worker from paying money to a union if they choose to. It simply protects those who don't want to pay.
I think of it as, and I don't know if I should use this term, but it's like informed consent.
That's exactly, yeah. It's all about, I mean, you know, you waiving your rights. You have this First Amendment right, and if you don't want to exercise it, the government can't just assume you don't want to exercise your First Amendment rights and say, well, we're stopping you from exercising your First Amendment rights because you didn't tell us ahead of time that you wanted to. That's not the way rights work. That's not the way the First Amendment works. You don't have to seek the government's permission to exercise your rights. It's the other way around. They need to get your explicit waiver before they stop you from exercising it.
God bless you and your work, sir. Righttowork.org. Patrick Simmons doing a phenomenal job. Like I told you, there's a lot going on in the country, folks. We're here to keep your finger on the pulse of it all. Godspeed. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Sam.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. You
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
One of the U.S. cities seeing a big spike in COVID-19 cases is Houston. There, the mayor, Sylvester Turner, is now calling on Texas state Republicans to scrap their plans for an in-person convention in the city later this month. He says it's the only convention still on the schedule in the city that has not been pushed back or revamped its plans.
Hosting a convention, an indoor convention, at this time in the city of Houston is a bad idea.
There's a report that the White House is working on a message that would say the U.S. needs to learn to live with the coronavirus pandemic. The Washington Post reporting that White House officials are hoping, in its words, Americans will grow numb to the escalating death toll and will learn to accept thousands of new cases a day. And this is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root for the MAGA Mall. TheMAGAMall.com. The MAGA Mall is your one-stop online shopping mall for great MAGA and Trump caps, t-shirts, flags, face masks, coins, jewelry, and other products. They even have MAGA cowboy hats. They pride themselves in offering the largest selection of the finest quality MAGA caps on the market at the most competitive prices, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. The vast majority of the MAGA caps available on the markets, they are pure junk. The MAGA Mall caps are made from premium cotton with the finest embroidery. Everything on their caps is embroidered. Every star and every stripe, the presidential seal, even the president's signature. When you purchase a cap from the MAGA Mall, you can rest assured you're buying the finest MAGA cap made. They have Rolls Royce caps at Chevrolet prices. Get 10% off your order. Use promo code WAR10. That's WAR10 at checkout for the highest quality MAGA products. Go to themagamall.com. That's the, T-H-E, MAGA, M-A-G-A, Mall, M-A-L-L.com. TheMAGAMall.com.
Some states are reporting positive trends when it comes to COVID-19, but the coronavirus continues to surge across the U.S. overall, infecting nearly 300,000 people so far in the month of July, and it's only the 7th. Some states and cities putting shutdown orders back in place. Yesterday, several states, including West Virginia, Tennessee, and Montana, hit new high seven-day averages. A New Jersey congressman who was elected as a Democrat is facing a primary challenge today as he runs for re-election as a Republican. Representative Jeff Van Drew switched from Democrat to GOP after voting against impeaching President Trump. Former George W. Bush speechwriter Bob Patterson is challenging Van Drew. Democratic Senator Cory Booker is facing a primary challenge by first-time candidate Lawrence Ham. Remember, you can find us online anytime. We're at usaradio.com. And this is USA Radio News.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, Kurt, the White House says no national mask policy. Do you want to respond?
Well, Sam, I mean, as far as I've been able to see, the virus itself is smaller than the holes in the mask. I mean, you're going to have to make yourself some plastic thing that covers your whole body if you supposedly think you're going to be safe from the virus getting into you. So, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me that if the virus is smaller than the holes in the mask, why people are wearing the mask, does it?
Nope, there you have it. I think that's correct, and I think we need to be very careful when we start mandating masks. I think that Americans are going to be livid when they find out that, you know what, there's a good chance the virus isn't even airborne, Kurt. I mean, I'm not here to tell you all the facts.
That's like moving the curtain back from the Wizard of Oz, you know? I mean, you're going to really cause some troubles.
Well, what if it's the truth? It's not going to cause any trouble. It's just going to bless people. All right, Dr. Mark Siegel.
Dr. Mark Siegel, Sam. Let's see. I'm looking to see. Is he on the top or on the bottom of this
group? I have no idea. I gave you this like 20 minutes to look through to figure it out, you know, because
what
I do, remember, is I pick stories from your dates. And then when I use them, I take them out.
WorldNet Daily's got this.
So hold on, I take them out so we don't use them again. So if you give me 20 stories, and I like have relevance to the middle 10. When I say have relevance, I mean the topics warrant or the topic discussion, you know, ties it together. Then I bring them up, and so if there's 20 stories, I might take out the middle 10. I don't know, you know. I guess I could start to number them all for you. You want me to start doing that? I'll get the stories from you.
Don't worry, I won't be sending anymore. It says Dr. Mark Siegel. No, I'm not doing it. Dr. Mark Siegel, coronavirus spike, not second wave, migratory virus declining in northeast hot zone, he says. We're on the Daily Peace.
See, this story is important, Kurt, in my opinion. You got to keep sending them, man. We just got to keep track of them and get to them as fast as we can. Who is this doctor, Kurt? Mark Siegel, who is this guy?
Well, he's a doctor, of course. In this case, he's out of a... Sorry, I got the WorldNet Daily thing coming up in front of me where I
think the guy's a good guy, though, and I think he's highlighting something really important here, Kurt, which is this. The coronavirus spike is not a second wave. All right? That's the first thing to understand. Migratory viruses declining in the northeast hot zone. So he's talking about the United States, and he's saying, look, this is not a second wave, guys. We can't just melt down. Believe it or not, things are getting better, is what he's basically highlighting, right, Kurt?
Well, yeah, but that's not news that people want to hear.
I want to talk about because it's important. It's the truth. This story is vital.
Professor of medicine at New York University. He says,
This guy's not a small fry, Kurt.
He says, I'm calling it a migratory virus right now. That's what he said on Fox News, because different regions are affected. He says the Northeast, which has been the hardest hit, is now seeing a decrease in cases, while there's an increase in the South, the Southwest and the West, he pointed out.
In other words, he's kind of saying this migratory idea says it's sweeping and it comes in, does its it's like a storm, comes in, does its damage, and then moves on for the most part. What he's kind of saying, right?
Kind of like weather.
Yeah. Okay. This guy's also a Fox News medical contributor, right?
Yeah. Regarding hospitalizations, they say conservative review columnist Daniel Horowitz points out the number of new patients being admitted for serious coronavirus infections is extremely low. What they are actually counting are the extra people coming in for all the delayed health care caused by the lockdown, he wrote. That's a very important point, I think.
So repeat it, because I agree.
Well... You know, we're told we've got continued amounts of hospitalizations. Well, he says the extra people are coming in for all these delayed health care things that they didn't do that were caused by the lockdown. He goes on to say,
in other words, when you say caused by the lockdown, the hospitals, you know, said we're not going to take any... What, elective surgeries?
Yeah,
is that how they call it?
Right. Optional or whatever.
Yeah. And so a lot of people stayed home, and even people who felt like they needed to go to the hospital didn't want to go because they were afraid they were going to get the virus, et cetera. And this is merely a backlog writing itself, because now that things are opened up, people are going in and saying, I'm going to do that elective surgery. Elective doesn't mean, by the way, this is an interesting term, this elective idea. Or this, you know, optional idea. It doesn't mean that you don't need it. It just means that you won't die without it right now.
That the government says it's not essential.
Right. Okay, that's a good way to put it. And so this is important, but now this doctor Mark Siegel, this well-known Fox contributor, this well-known professor and physician, is basically saying, hey, you know what? This spike isn't what you think it is. And when they're mixing the numbers together, when they're saying everybody has the corona, it isn't true. And this is really a backlog writing itself. This is a migratory virus, which means he's saying it kind of just sweeps through your area and then moves on. So the Northeast isn't experiencing it. They're on the decline. The South is experiencing it. But you know what? It's just their turn. The weather hit them for a little while. Kind of an idea. I think this is an important, point this doctor's making, Kurt, and you know, I hope it makes the press briefings, right?
Well, I'm sure it's made the press briefings, but he says thanks to universal testing in hospitals, which is something that they pushed the president to get done, and so you've got you know, these 5-minute kind of tests that are available now, so you can basically test so many people thousands and thousands. But anyway, he says, thanks to universal testing in hospitals, they are discovering more asymptomatic cases. Now, what does that mean, asymptomatic? It means, somebody's sick, but they don't even show the symptoms of it. Well, you know, then you got to ask yourself, are they really sick? But anyway, he goes on.
Well, if they say you're sick, or you're sick. If they say you're sick, sir, you're sick. Don't you know that?
They're discovering more asymptomatic cases than ever
before. See, your
point's
spot on, and that's why we can't just talk about the number of cases. It's a waste of time, Kurt.
He says, which had nothing to do with the original purpose of the hospital stay. Thus, they are blaming the fallout of the lockdown on the easing of the lockdown.
All right. Anyway,
so in other words, they're blaming the problems that they caused on the shutting down of the lockdown. And, you know, really, it's the same problem is the officials that, hey, remember they told us, what, 2.2 million people were going to die, and now we're at about 120,000. And you got to really question a lot of those simply because there's questionable stuff around there.
There's questionable reporting. There's underlying conditions. There's all kinds of manipulations that are reality that are injected into the data or represented by the data or not represented as the case may be, right?
Yes.
Anyway, I think Dr. Mark Siegel has a valid point. And again, I missed this in the news. Kurt brought it forward, and I think it's worth the discussion. Any more from Dr. Mark? I think he ought to be one of the people on the panel speaking out because I think he's speaking candidly, Kurt.
Yep. No, nothing else.
And I think he's an expert. I think this guy does know. Mm-hmm. All right, Gowdy's in the news. Kurt, what's that? Trey Gowdy, former congressman?
This is the former congressman, Sam, as far as I know, or else maybe current one. It's kind of hard to keep track where
he's
he
out
is.
Now,
you know, they
think,
move
sure.
in and out. Trey Gowdy is his name. The Washington Examiner has the piece. It said Peter Stroke likely in John Durham's sights. Now, you know, we've heard about this like forever, and speedy trial takes years. Now, way different than the Constitution intended, but at least maybe there will be some justice. I don't know.
Well, I pray we have justice, Kurt.
Yeah.
It's worth bringing up because, again, if we forget about these cases and don't, you know, put pressure, then they will just go away, and the swamp will just have its way, and there'll just be a flash in the pan in the news, a shame on you, a slap on the wrist, and no real accountability. I think we need to push for accountability in these cases, Kurt. And I think that's the point Trey's making here.
Yep.
I think he's right.
Yeah.
I think he's absolutely right. So I don't want to forget about these cases. I also don't want to forget about that guy. Shoot, his name is slipping my mind. See what happens. Who was in Washington, who... got murdered. What's his name, Kurt?
Seth Rich.
I don't want to forget about that guy either.
Good point.
See? And I wish I could do more about it. It's the problem. All right, mm-hmm. Joy Beaker's in the news, Kurt. She's what, a columnist?
Well, Joy Behar.
Behar.
Says, shame on Thomas for dissenting on LGBTQ ruling. He's married to a Caucasian woman. So, in other words... somehow that makes it where Clarence Thomas can't dissent.
Hold on, let's talk about this. This is nuts on parade. Hold on.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
All right, we're talking about Joy Behar. And I don't know about this lady. Not shame on Thomas. We're talking about Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court, right, Kurt?
Yeah, remember he's a black man, Sam?
Yes, sir.
And, you know, this is a white woman, and somehow she can go ahead and, you know, basically take it to him.
That's because she's a liberal, so she can do whatever she wants, right?
Yeah, well, that's the way it looks to me, Sam.
And it's a shame, and it's wrong. So what she's saying is, shame on Thomas for his dissent. Okay, he went against the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender ruling. Which I think he's right to do so, but they say he can't do that because he's married to a Caucasian woman. Now, that just proves that Behar's a racist, Kurt. What does the fact that he's married to a white woman have anything to do with anything? I don't get the relationship, except for this whacked out liberal can say whatever she wants, and she's a racist, and no one calls her on it. Isn't that what's going on?
She said, I was shocked, and I say, bravo, Neil Gorsuch, and there's hope for America. I feel much better today about the whole situation. You know what a disappointment this must be for the Trump base. She says, I mean, they overlooked Stormy Daniels. They overlooked the grab them by the genitals remark. They overlooked making fun of the handicap. They overlooked locking children up all for the Supreme Court. This is the thanks they get. Joy Behar continued, Alito and Kavanaugh, and particularly Judge Thomas, should hang his head in shame. This is a man who is, in fact, married to a Caucasian woman, which was illegal until 1967 when the Supreme Court voted in favor of Loving versus Virginia. They voted for integrated marriage in 67. That was, again, decided by the Supreme Court, which is where he sits, so he should know better. The other two are lost causes. I don't really follow her logic.
Well, there is no logic. All you got to do is hate on a conservative, get a big massive platform to promote your spew, your dishonest, manipulated rhetoric, and have the people basically, you know, manipulated into believing in it, Kurt, by repeated lies. Look, Clarence has every right to oppose the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender agenda. He has every right to have his own views on the courts, regardless of who he's married to, Kurt. But that just makes the point that government ought to get out of marriage at the federal level in the first place. Nevertheless, I digress, except to say Clarence has every right to think what he wants, and shame on Gorsuch is what I would say, Kurt. Congratulations and you know what? Thank you, Clarence Thomas, is my response, Kurt.
Good point.
Shame on Joy and shame on Gorsuch. All right, Donald Trump doesn't get credit for a lot of the good he does. Most of the good President Trump does is behind the scenes. The mainstream press doesn't report on it. President Trump might tweet about it, but man, it's so hard to keep up on his tweets, but it's his only way to circumvent the hostile, abusive press. He could go on talk shows. I wish he'd do more of that. Nevertheless, I think he is doing the best he can. But here's a headline where I think Trump deserves some more credit, Kurt. Trump confirms major U.S. troop drawdown in, quote, delinquent Germany. This headline is really important, Kurt.
Well, it seems like it to me. I mean, imagine people paying for the services they received, whether it's their countries where we basically give them free services of our military. He basically says that our NATO ally you know, is not paying enough for their defense. He says, we're putting the number down to 25,000 soldiers. That's what he said at the White House. We're protecting Germany and their delinquent. That doesn't make sense. The president continued referring to Germany's failure to attain a goal set by all NATO members in 2014. Here we are in 2020, 6 years later, to spend at least 2% of gross national product on defense by 2024. Germany says it hopes to reach 2% by 2031. Until they pay, we're removing our soldiers, a number of our soldiers, Trump said, noting America bears the burden of militarily defending Europe and gets precious little in return. American facilities in Germany currently include Ramstein Air Base, Critical Hub, and he goes on. The article from Breitbart goes on, but the bottom line is, imagine a president saying that if we have our military defending you, you need to pay.
And imagine him also saying, you know what? We're going to do a troop drawdown and bring some of our soldiers home, Kurt. This is an example where it's so hard to get the news. Okay, even guys like us who hunt for it struggle to, number one, get to it. Number two, be able to report on it. There's so many topics to talk about. I love all the stories Kurt sends me, folks. The problem is I don't want to be the guy to spike a story that Kurt brings. There's so many good ones that, man, and sometimes I even see a story and I'm like, man, I wonder what the take on this is going to be or the backstory on this is going to be. And when I hear the backstory, I'm like, man, this is like vital. You got to bring this to the people. And the only reason you see frustration with me and the amount of stories that I get from Kurt on the radio is I don't want to be the guy to shut one of them down. They're all so valuable and good. And this is where, you know, we could criticize President Trump and say, oh, man, you know, he's a warmonger guy. He's surrounded by all kinds of these generals. And that has some truth to it. There's too many generals surrounding the president that are hawkish for sure. But look, when do we hear about President Trump drawing down troops, expecting other folks to meet deadlines set by international bodies to say, you know what, you're delinquent here. You're derelict in your duty. You've got to, you know, step up here, or, you know, we're backing away. We're bringing our folks home. We're drawn down. That never makes the press. This is where President Trump is not as hawkish as it may appear. Not even close. In fact, he's probably the least war president we've had in our lifetimes. But again, if you don't hear those headlines, Kurt, you can't hardly even know about it.
Very good, Sam. In the Breitbart piece, it says, now Trump is making good on his promise. In his White House remarks to reporters, Trump noted the presence of American troops is a boost to local German commerce, and they will now have to make do with less U.S. dollars circulating in their economies. He says those are well-paid soldiers. They live in Germany. They spend vast amounts of money in Germany. Everywhere around those bases is very prosperous for Germany. So Germany takes, and then on top of it, they treat us very badly on trade.
And the mainstream press derelict in its duty. You don't hear anything about this, do you, Kurt? Again, President Trump is spot on. He's right. And I don't know how we get a hold of these and how we cover enough of them. Because they're so important, Kurt. Anyway, I commend President Trump for this one. And again, I look for reasons to embrace principles that make sense. This is a principle that makes sense. Look, if we're going to be around supporting you, number one, you need to want us there. Number two, you need to fund it. If you can't fund it, you need to be doing all that you can. You know, you need to follow the guidelines and the targets set. And when you're not going to do those things, we're going to say that you're delinquent. And we're going to back away. And anyway, good on President Trump, but where's the mainstream press to let you know about that?
A little bit more footnote here, at least understanding this. They say in the Breitbart piece, as the U.S. readies for its German withdrawal, that doesn't mean a total absence from Europe. Trump indicated last summer he could move some troops from Germany to Poland, telling Poland's president during an Oval Office meeting, Germany's not living up to what they're supposed to be doing with respect to NATO, and Poland is. Duda has been, that's the name of the president there in Poland, has been trying to woo more American forces, even suggesting Poland would contribute over $2 billion to create a permanent U.S. base. In the current plan, at least some Germany-based troops are expected to be shifted to Poland.
All right. Well, there you have it. And again, like I said, part of it needs to be we need to go where we're wanted, Kirk. I mentioned that. I think there's a truth to that, too. All right. Before the end of the hour, I'll try to squeeze in at least one more piece. Amazon's sale of, quote, Blue Lives Matter shirts sparks outrage, Kurt.
Right. If you're, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not familiar with Blue Lives, they're talking about policemen, right, Sam? And
yes, sir.
They really got some people ticked off about it. The subheadline says it's going to cost somebody more than likely a police officer their life. And that's what it seems to me. There are people that serve us and ought to at least be supported by us. I'm not saying that every, like a bad policeman is somebody we ought to report or support, but I am saying that good people are in every place and bad guys are in every place. We just got to get rid of the bad ones. Get them out of there.
No question about it, Kurt. But I'll tell you what baffles me the most. Ready?
Yeah.
Who are these people? What on earth would you ever want to create a shirt that proposes to murder anybody or any group?
I
get defense, but we're not talking about defense here, right?
And you got to ask yourself a simple question. Why is the term All Lives Matter so upsetting to some people? You know, I mean, it's just, or why is Make America Great Again upsetting? You know, I mean, it's just out of control, Sam.
Yeah, and I look at this and I go, it's true. Why would you ever want a shirt that like Blue Lives Murder? Okay, I don't agree with the Black Lives Movement at all, Kurt. I don't think they bring anything good to the table,
right?
At all, period. But Kurt, I would never advocate for their murder. I would say that I think Black Lives Matter in the context that every life matters. Of course, Black Lives Matter. Of course, White Lives Matter. Of course, animals' lives matter. Life matters, no doubt about it. And whenever a group is under hostility, I want to defend them as well. And I want to defend the black babies that are being murdered by the hundreds of thousands. I want to defend all life to the best of my ability. And I bring this up because I would never advocate for the murder of black lives or any life for that matter. I don't know what's wrong with these people, but they've just flat out, they're so unhinged that it's hard to even just fathom.
And so people understand... The shirt basically says Blue Lives Murder. And so these people are saying that pretty much any policeman is murdering people. And that's just not the case.
But what the result of that will be, though, is the intentional then hatred directed towards the police, where it will turn into, well, we better stop the murderer, so we better kill her. It reminds me of the Steve Voss song where the guy goes in and blows up the abortion clinic so he can save life. Mm-hmm. Right? It's nuts. And this is what we're talking about. So I agree the shirt's not calling for murder. It's calling out the police saying they are murderers. But in effect, what it means is put a murder tag on the cops by nature. It's dangerous, Kurt. I don't see how we can allow anybody to say such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there you have it, huh?
Yeah. At least in their defense, Amazon does have T-shirts that say All Lives Matter.
Well, they're probably getting rid of them like Walmart did. I pray they don't.
I know. I agree.
And I think we need to say All Life Matters, not just lives. Because what they want to do is they want to say animals.
Babies.
You know, and babies that they're not really... a life, you know.
Good point.
They want to go down that lie idea. But all life matters. There's no doubt about it. Well, thanks for being alongside with the ride, ladies and gentlemen. I know we got a lot of stories. I know there's a ton we don't get to. I'm doing the best that I can. I don't want to be the story spiker, though. And there's so much good news. I don't want to cut any of it short. I want to educate. I want to encourage us all to know that love is the key. The love of the Prince of Peace. God save the Republic. We'll be right back.